It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 8 o'clock, Carlos Rolon, also known as Design, tremendous contemporary artist, internationally known from Chicago, Chicago-born artist from the southwest side of Chicago. We'll talk with Carlos about his new exhibit at the Cultural Center, which just opened, and he's got a big panel discussion, which he's a part of. It'll be at the Lake Effects Summit and Expo this weekend. But first, joining me in studio, Howard Lerner. He's executive director of the Environmental Law and Policy Center. Good to see you.
Good to join you.
So this is this story kind of popped up right at the end of the week last week. Kind of started to see some pieces come in about Exelon essentially endorsing legislation or pushing legislation through Springfield that would require consumer essentially hikes. Rate hikes,
right,
to be able to almost serve as a bailout for some of their power plants that they may not need anymore. Explain this.
All right. We're in the last 3 weeks of the legislative session, sometimes called silly season. You know, the legislators are focusing on the budget, and then anybody who has a particular proposal that, you know, maybe if they proposed it in February and they had hearings on it, it would get shot down. The last few weeks, we get into silly season. Exelon is proposing legislation that's pretty lopsided. What it proposes is that consumers be forced to pay hundreds of millions of dollars for 3 out of Exelon's 11 nuclear power plants that aren't competitive in the economic market.
Okay.
In Illinois, we have an excess of supply over demand. Businesses and people are doing energy efficiency in their home. Demand is going down. But there's a glut of nuclear plants, coal plants, natural gas plants, and more wind power is coming into the market. So we all know how it works. If you have a lot of supply and less demand, then the supply that's at the margin is an economic. Well, Exelon, 3 of their nuclear units out of the 11, they say are not economically competitive and need to be shut down. However, their Exelon management is saying, we really don't want to shut them down, but we want consumers to pay hundreds of millions of dollars of a subsidy for them.
First to keep them afloat.
To keep them running.
They will say this is to keep those plants in operation so the jobs will stay in those communities. Because we're talking about
Clinton, Illinois, which is in central Illinois. Yeah. Moline, Illinois, which is in the western part of the state. All right. First of all, let's be clear. Nobody likes people to go out of work and be put out of work. You know, we didn't like it when people at the Nabisco plant on the southwest side, hundreds of workers lost their jobs, people in Caterpillar and Peoria. But Nabisco didn't come to us and the union didn't say, well, people around the state of Illinois pay hundreds of millions of dollars on a cookie tax, if you will, to keep the Oriole plant workers in their jobs.
It almost goes against the whole idea of capitalism what a lot of lawmakers have complained about the auto industry and the banking industry and others where we've bailed out. Exelon kind of wants that same kind of thing here in the state of Illinois.
Yeah. What Exelon is saying is, look, our management is making a decision to shut these plants down, but we'd like to keep them running even though they're not economic. If we can get consumers to pay hundreds of millions of dollars, then we'll keep them open. So let's look at what that means in Illinois' economy. First of all, Illinois' fiscal crisis is pretty bad. We're talking about schools shutting down, mental health programs, kids programs, battered women shelters. There are a lot of high priorities and a lot of people at the top of the line when it comes to how do we use taxpayers' or ratepayers' money. This isn't probably the top priority. Our legislators are focusing on the budget. They need to do that, and we need to keep, you know, schools, kids, mental health, that's the stuff that's most important. Secondly, Exelon is in a competitive market. That's what they wanted. Exelon made profits, when you take out their adjustments, of more than $600 million in the first quarter. So over the course of a year, that's $2.5 billion. This is not a company going out of business. This is a highly, highly profitable company. It's not one that's at the edge. They have a lot of profitable plants. They have some plants that aren't profitable. And then you look at how do we invest money. If we're going to spend money in the state in terms of ratepayer or taxpayer money, let's use it for the clean new technology.
Well, that's the fun
energy
part
efficiency,
of the story.
Solar power, wind power. That's what the public wants.
Well, okay,
that's about 2% right now of the mix.
And you're, and then the government, the federal government, the state government seem to be more and more inclined to invest into these new technologies. You just said at the beginning of this that you're seeing electricity rates go down because of efficiencies, because
that's
people
right.
are choosing different things, are getting smarter about their energy intake.
Right. Electricity use is going down.
Right.
Rates are going up a little bit, but use is going down.
Use is going down.
Businesses and people are using less because everything you use is more energy efficient.
Okay, so the thing that really grabbed everybody's attention out of this is a little clause when you start to look into this Exelon bill, which I have another question just about how politics works and how they sponsored a bill. But, you know, being able to pull back the curtain a little bit and go to page 10, page 12, page 15, there actually is a clause that would essentially wipe out funding for some of these technologies we're talking about, which are, in turn are their competitors.
Well, this is the so-called Exelon oops. Let's look at what happened. Speaker Madigan, Senate President Cullerton, others told all the parties who are involved here, sit down, see if you can work something out. There's very strong support by the Clean Energy Jobs Coalition to beef up Illinois investment in clean solar energy and renewable energy, wind power, creates tremendous amount of jobs, tremendous amount of economic growth.
Yeah, we talked about it on
the
show.
Here in downtown Chicago, 12 North American and global wind power corporate headquarters, lots of construction jobs. This is good for jobs, good for business, good for economic growth, good for the environment. So legislators have said if there's going to be any sort of a package, you got to involve clean, renewable energy and energy efficiency. Mm-hmm. And they said to all the parties, see what you can work out. And we've sat down endless meetings with Exelon and ComEd. And in good faith, we're trying to work something out. So Exelon proposed some legislation. They have an army of lawyers and lobbyists. They drafted something. It went to what's called the Legislative Reference Bureau. And then they brought it to a couple of legislators and said, we'd like you to submit it on our behalf. And they made a big to-do about how supportive they were of renewable energy and how much funding there was in that. Till somebody actually read the language in this big bill, and they almost, not quite, but almost zeroed it out. At which point, when they got called on it,
they
looked
comment.
At it, they said, oops, you know, come on. Only Exelon and their lawyers know whether it was really an oops or not, but they have an army of highly paid lawyers, technical people, lobbyists.
It's hard to believe they missed that.
It's hard to believe that bill wasn't reviewed by a lot of people, but maybe they all had a big collective oops. But it's funny, they had the oops on the stuff that the public is pushing for, not on the stuff that they want.
And maybe
the
$1 billion
bailout.
Maybe I'm naive. I'm up here from my radio seat, but I could have thought that the way the government worked is that we would elect a representative, and the representative would then make laws. Put bills into, I got the Schoolhouse Rock.
Yep.
How have I seen in the pieces that I've, Crane's piece, the other stuff that was on Progress Illinois, Exelon introduces, Exelon sponsors. Those are words that are supposed to be, those are for legislators. Why is Exelon introducing bills? How does that work?
Well, there's a little bit of shorthand being used here, but sometimes the shorthand really isn't that much different than reality. Look, Exelon and other companies invest very heavily in lobbyists. They have a lot of people. They have a lot of lawyers. When you're dealing with hundreds of millions of dollars of subsidies, investing in an army of attorneys is a high leverage game. So what happens here is Exelon or whoever it is will say we have an interest in getting a particular bill passed, and whether they're a big company or a small company or a municipality or a civic organization, they might go to a legislator and say, Representative so-and-so, we know you care about our particular issue. Would you be kind enough to sponsor some legislation?
Right.
And if you're a small group and you don't have a lot of attorneys and so forth, what the legislator will do is say to the Legislative Reference Bureau, that staff for the legislature, we'd like you to draft something that would do the following.
Got it.
If you happen to have a lot of attorneys who have time for you and a lot of lobbyists and others.
They'll just write
the You bill. Might write a bill. You will then ask a legislator to introduce it. The process is your draft will go to the Legislative Reference Bureau, which might have some comments on it and push something back. And then a legislator will introduce it. So what's happening here is I think some of the reporters who recognize what's really going on are just cutting to the chase, and they're saying it's an Exelon-sponsored bill.
It's just amazing to me since they're
literally that's not what it is.
Right.
But they're cutting to the chase in terms of what they see is going on.
I think it says a lot about what's happening in Springfield. Howard Lerner, he's the executive director of the Environmental Law and Policy Center. Let's take a quick break. We come back. Lead.
All right.
Stay with us. My guest tonight, Howard Lerner in studio, the executive director of the Environmental Law and Policy Center. The other big story, we just talked about the big bill that Representative Exelon put into the put in earlier this week. Well, let's talk about the other big story, the Tribune today talking about several Illinois communities have lead in their water. This obviously is something that we've been paying a lot of attention to in this country, and it's something that a lot of people in this state and in this city have sort of said, once the testing starts, we're going to see some nasty results.
You know, think about it for a minute. We are sitting on the world's largest supply of fresh water. I mean, the Great Lakes, 22% of the fresh water in the world. People in California are now suffering droughts. There are places around the planet desperately looking for water. Here we are, almost a quarter of the world's fresh water, right outside our door here in Chicago. You know, the first thing we got to do is not screw it up, okay? You know, first of all, we got to make sure that we don't contaminate or pollute the lake water. That's our drinking water supply here. Secondly, we need to make sure that from the point it goes from the lake to people's taps, that we clean it up. You know, we're in the most modern society in the world. This isn't a third world developing country. There are a lot of old pipes. You know, we need to identify those pipes and over time, in a reasonable way, but hopefully soon, replace the old pipes with clean pipes.
I mean, how do you do that? I still am perplexed on the plans. I mean, I saw some stuff earlier in the week about replacing lead pipes, maybe with a different kind of pipe. I mean, that's all great. But, I mean, I have not been under the city ever. How do you get under there and replace all the pipes that are under the city of Chicago and the surrounding regions?
Well, first of all, you can't do it all at once. Who's kidding who? You identify the places where you have serious problems, and you focus on the problem areas. But right now, Peoples Gas is in the midst of replacing all the gas pipelines in the city, all the gas pipes. Mm-hmm. I mean, the price tag on that has gone from $2 billion to $4 to $6 billion. I think I read something about it going even higher. You know, so we are digging up streets, we're digging up alleys, and all over the city, gas pipes and gas mains are being lifted out, the old ones, new ones being put in. So we know how to do it, okay? Now, the water pipes we're dealing with, some of those are in public, you know, roads, alleys, and some of them actually go under people's houses. But the first thing we need to do on that is really figure out what are the problem spots. You know, not everywhere, but what are the places where we really have problem? Test. And in those places where there are high lead levels in the water, if people are going to be drinking that water, we need to replace the pipes.
Easier said than done. How?
It's not easily done.
How do you invest in that infrastructure? For the city of Chicago, like you mentioned in the last segment, just about the crippling debt, pension payments, schools, all these kind of things, it's going to take a chunk of change to replace the infrastructure in the city, just city proper alone.
Absolutely. So first thing, if Peoples Gas is spending billions of dollars to replace the gas pipes, and there are areas where they are replacing gas pipes that have been identified as having water pipes that have high lead levels, you know, don't dig up the streets twice. That makes it much more expensive. While you're digging it up once to dig up the gas pipe, do something on the lead pipe for the water pipe. So that's, you know, be really efficient and targeted about how you do it. The real cost is digging something up. It's not the pipe itself. It's all the work that goes into digging it up, you know, digging up the street, taking out the old pipe, putting in a new pipe, you know, that's the work, that's the heaviest cost. So when you're doing the gas pipes, if there are areas where the water pipes are a problem, that's a good way to pare it, save the cost. Secondly, the city has raised water rates by quite a bit, water and sewage rates.
Yeah.
And the purpose of doing that was to take those revenues and roll it into modernizing and upgrading the system. So that's a really good source of funding. That's not your general tax revenues, you know, and we're trying to figure out how do we do things for kids and schools and everything else in the city, pay for the police, pay for the firemen, pensions. But the water mains, the water situation, you know, is really driven by payment through water rates and sewer rates that the mayor and his administration, the city council, raised by about 30% to 40% at the beginning of the first term. Mm-hmm. That was to be raised explicitly for the purpose of modernizing and upgrading the infrastructure. It's being used for that purpose, and that's good. What we need to do is target what are the places that have real problems when it comes to lead. That's where you go first.
Howard, let me ask a pie in the sky or a long-term question. I mean, obviously, we're seeing modern cities get to the point where infrastructure across the board has to be replaced.
Absolutely.
And we're seeing that, oh, man, we might have made a mistake with what we built these pipes with. How do we make sure we don't make that mistake again? I mean, let's say that the planet does survive another 500 years, right? What do you do to, I mean, do we have to rethink the way that we are sort of using pipes for our water, maybe a different kind of carrier system? What is it to protect ourselves so we don't have to do this every 100 years?
Well, first of all, let's recognize that infrastructure does need to be replaced. You know, I don't care how well you build a road. A road isn't going to last 100 years.
Right.
So, you know, infrastructure needs to be maintained. It needs to be fixed. You know, our roads, and if we did perfect maintenance in the city of Chicago with the freeze and thaw cycles and hot weather and cold weather, we're going to have potholes that need to get fixed. So we're not going to build infrastructure that all of it's going to last 200 years. We're going to have to continually maintain, upgrade, improve it. But take a look at what's going on with the Peoples Gas pipe replacement right now. What they're doing is replacing the gas pipelines that have been there for years and years and years. But the city's changing. You know, we need to be looking at how do you invest in pipes, how do you invest in infrastructure for where the city is going, not just where the city has been. So there's a lot of industrial development now going back on the southeast side. You know, southeast side, the old steel mills and such that sadly closed down in the 70s, the 80s. Well, Finkel Steel's going to the southeast side. Method opened up. Pullman's being revitalized. All right, so when you're looking at how do you invest in infrastructure, do you replace the pipes that were there for the 80s and 90s, or do you look ahead to what's the development that's going on there, and do we need to do it differently to plan for the future? You know, the great Gretzky used to say he was going to where the puck will be, not where the puck is. That's how we need to look at infrastructure. We need to invest in where we see our city going. And we need to take care of that and take care of that well. And we need to recognize that infrastructure isn't going to be there. You know, that road is going to need fixing and repairing sometime between now and 200 years. And that's part of the basic fabric, the basic infrastructure that enables us to drink clean water, breathe clean air, and be able to get from place to place in Chicago.
Roads, soon where we're going, we don't need roads, right? Back to the future there.
We're going to have different sorts of cars and different sorts of roads.
There you go.
And as we look at that, we need to look at what are the sort of cars that are coming into the market, what's going to be happening with public transit, which will be very different, and plan looking forward.
It's exciting.
Not just doing the same old,
I mean, it's
same
exciting.
Old.
Obviously, the research or the resources will be limited, but it's exciting. And, you know, hopefully we've got some great minds coming up who will be thinking about infrastructure and how our cities work. Howard Lerner, he's the executive director of the Environmental Law and Policy Center. Howard, great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Good to join you.